Thank you very much, and really appreciate your kind invitation, possibility to be here, this nice place. And I will try to tell you some very restricted and short story about some sort of pattern formation which one possibly can observe. And independent of the fact that the title sounds quite general and contains these very general words like friction, fracture, and stick slip motion, I will be very much restricted in my talk. And I would like to mention from the very beginning that stick slip motion is very generic phenomena in condensed matter physics, and one should be very careful each time perfectly formulating what is really the subject. And the second point which I would like to mention is that it's not completely that fracture and friction community are completely independent and not cite each other, but in many cases they work really independently, and in my opinion basically only S quakes in some sense brought this two community together, but I don't think that what I will try to tell you today has any relevance to S quake. The important point is that people observe that sometimes friction or motion of some block, I just mean basically for the moment only this picture, some blocks moves along some rigid substrate, that this motion is not spatially homogeneous, that people observe that sometimes you have places where object is in some sense stick to the substrate, in some places it's detached. And one of the best examples of this, I think this is maybe the first example of this sort of motion, is famous Schallmach waves in rubber friction. And important thing that there is real detachment here. This is just macroscopic opening is observed. There are other observations, and mostly I will talk about this, where you still have inhomogeneous situations that in some sense conditions at this part of the interface and conditions at this part of the interface are different, but no real observable detachment. You can see, and this is slightly different story, and this will be mostly a subject of my talk. But before showing you some recent experimental results and model we try to adapt to think about problems like that, I would like to give you very, very brief introduction to basic theory of cracks. Just assuming that you don't know this story precisely. Of course, this is not from Jim, whom I see here. If you just apply some, let's say, tensile stress to some elastic body, you definitely have some elastic energy store in this region with elastic density proportional to P square over E, where E is elastic modulus. It's clear that this is not energetically favorable state of our system. And in principle, if you introduce crack, which is just separation in this case of these two interfaces, you definitely release stress in some region of this scale, and you gain this sort of energy. This is two-dimensional description for the moment. This is not very, very crucial. On the other hand, the price you have to pay for this is just that you produce two surfaces and you lose this energy. If you plot these two energy together, you will have this graph, and you will see that if the length of the crack is larger than some critical value, you really go down with energy, and this state is more favorable. Actually, it's clear that if you just, instead of this stress body, have two pieces as one stress body, you gain a lot of energy, because instead of bulk energy, you have only surface energy. But it's not so easy to nucleate this crack, because you have to overcome this barrier And that is why not all things we have here which are under stress are broken. And important thing that there is characteristic length scale in this problem, which is just inversely proportional to the applied stress. And if you somehow, if your length scale is bigger than this, or your stress is bigger if length scale is fixed in some problems, then you can crack the situation. So this is important. And basically, for the moment, there are only two ingredients in this point. You have elasticity and surface energy. And all the parameters which enters to this description are those from these two ingredients. A little bit, just one more piece of information about crack. This is the fact that if you look more carefully at small distances compared to your large scale, to your macroscopic scale, to stress distribution in the region, in the vicinity of the crack tip, it shows very strong stress concentration, which obeys this scaling, diverges like r to the 1/2, and of course it has some angular distribution, and this angular distribution is absolutely universal and can be calculated. And all information about your geometry, about applied stresses, is hidden in just this one scalar parameter, which is called in fracture community stress intensity factor. And actually, about 100 years, mathematicians and applied physicians just solved different elastic problems just to find this quantity. And it's a complicated elastic problem because you have to take into account outer boundary conditions, how stresses are distributed, and so on. But this behavior is universal. And what is very important, that the other representation of this fact, whether crack would like to shrink, go back, or just propagate, you can find calculating energy flux from elastic body, which is just this for this sort of distribution. And you say that it should be equal to surface energy alpha, and this is in other term representation. For example, where you have exact equality with correct prefactors, of course, here, it means that crack is in unstable equilibrium, for example. And this K, if you compare to previous formula, which I have shown in previous transparency, it means that this K, if you have only one length scale, the business scales like square root of this macroscopic length scale. So this is another representation of conditions that there is balance, some sort of balance between elastic and elastic forces and forces which is due to surface energy. Just stop with this introduction. I think it's sufficient to know that. And now I would like to show you some experimental results which recently obtained by French group of Baumberger, Carolee, and Ronzin, made very simple experiment on gel. Again, shows just this cartoon, then I will be more precise. So what they did, they took glass substrate, they put piece block of gel of about centimeters in this direction, about 3 centimeters in this direction, and they drive it. And in this experiment, important observations are the following. First of all, they clearly saw inhomogeneous distribution of some states of the interface in their object. Since this material is yes.
When they drag it,
I can show you more accurate. Yes, what they did. Yes, they put another glass substrate here. Somehow they did not actually glue it, but what they actually did, they did some a bit more sophisticated geometry, and they were absolutely sure that there is absolutely no sliding at this interface. So this is like one object.
And the pressure was uniform. The pressure.
They did experiment even without external pressure. No, of course, you have complicated elastic problem here. I will come to this point. Huh?
I know it's a complicated elastic problem. Or you know the boundary.
Yeah, yeah. I will come to this point. I will be absolutely precise. But I just would like to give you insight what they did in principle and what kind of observations they made. And then I will come to very accurate description what kind of boundary condition everywhere one should assume. Okay, they drive it with. Not with fixed force, but with fixed velocity. That's very important. I will come to this point. It's also very important. And the basic observation are the following. I already mentioned this. That they, since this material is transparent, they have possibility to really to understand what's going on the sliding interface. And they saw that in some places, it's really thick. It's just no motion, relative motion of this object with respect to this object, and in some places it slips. And what is very important, no observable detachment was seen. So this is still some sort of interface between gel and glass, and no vacuum inside. That's at least they have not seen anything like that. That I cannot tell you, but they stress this point very accurately, saying that this experiment very different from Shalamachwe. Cannot tell you this, cannot be sure, but I just trust them. They say that there is no observable detachment at this point. So you have some sort of contact, even in both places. But still, this piece and this piece, in some sense, are different. And what they observe is the following. Now I come to I want to show you experimental results. Oops, sorry, this is not this. If the driving velocity was high enough, what does it mean high enough? I'll do absolute values, something like about 100 microns per second driving velocity. They observe and they measure average shear stress as function of time on this object. They observe some linear, more or less pure elastic response of your block, and at some moment when it reaches some critical value, it drops and goes homogeneously to this value. What they observe simultaneously with this, that just one crack, let's say crack, some region which separates thick and slip region, was nucleated at the trailing edge of their block, traverses the whole sample, and sample is in sliding mode. After that, it slides homogeneously with fixed velocity, and this level of the stress they measure is function of the driving velocity, and this is just the result. So this picture is only if driving velocity is above some critical value. If the driving velocity was below some critical value, they measure this dependence of sigma versus time. So it's some sort of periodic dependence. And what they also saw in this experiment is that, so basically, situation is the following. In this, somewhere here, your interface is everywhere in stick condition. At some moment, the trailing edge nucleates some boundary which separates, I will try to combine maybe these two. So at some moment, the trailing edge appears this boundary, let's say, and traverses the sample, when time goes on, the stresses drops, and then Sometimes it's the whole interface in the sleep regime. Sometimes you can observe that only part of the interface in the sleep state, and again, the closing edge of the crack appears, and you have this crack, for example, this one pulse, they call it pulse, traverses the sample. And this is more or less this part. And again, it's in stick position, and then again, it increases. That's what they observe, and they could see it's not only this result, but they, I am saying, they can measure relative sliding velocity of gel against the substrate. And one more piece of information compared to this. Yes, sure.
B is the speed and
the,
in which you form this.
Where? Here? On which? B is the speed which you drive your block in average. Why I put it here, or what? This is all block in average, they fixed speed. Speed is a constant. What is not a constant is shear stress, because there is some string here, and it's quite tough, and they measure average stress, and this is oscillation not of the speed, this is oscillation of shear stress. In this experiment, velocity was fixed, driving velocity was fixed, and in average it always sleeps. In average it always sleeps, but it's not that it sleeps homogeneously. It sleeps in some funny way.
In your picture, there are two flipper genes, but what you're saying seems to indicate them just one. These domains where there's relative motion between the gel.
Yes.
In your picture, there are two of them. But in the experiment, is there just one that travels across?
See, it just depends on if it's long enough. They can see sometimes, at most, they see at most what they saw is, let's say, three boundary, one, two, three. In most cases, they saw two boundaries, and even in some cases, just saw only one. But I will come to this point. My feeling is this is just to the fact that they have very short object, and not because it's all should be like that. They see, but again, let me try to repeat. All this oscillation in principle has to do with the following fact, that it's the trailing edge at some moment appears or this edge of the crack. That they claim this. And what they also claim that they have not seen real hysteresis of the problem if they increase driving speed. So more or less, if your driving velocity is higher than critical value, you are in this situation. And this, it's no question for them. In this regime, you have homogeneous sliding. The interface is homogeneous, and this is homogeneous sliding, with more or less this friction law. It's not perfectly linear, but this is just increasing, shear stress increases with sliding velocity. And all this oscillation are due to the fact that you have propagation of those pulses, of sleep pulses along the interface. At least that's what they claim. Okay, that's the story, and experimental story, and we tried to introduce some, I would say, conceptually simple model. We are not trying to claim that this model must be really relevant to this experiment, but maybe it will be relevant to some other property, which in principle can catch this sort of phenomena. What I mean by this sort of phenomena, that in principle important ingredients are the following, that you really have to take into account the fact that your sliding in many cases is spatially is not homogeneous. Secondly, you have to be able to explain that you have some critical velocity, or some critical, we actually think that important property is not velocity, but shear stress, but this is a different story. And you have to be able to, basically that's it. And now I come to our model and precise boundary conditions, which you mentioned we have to. So assume that we have this block of gel, and for the moment it has finite length, but in principle I can think about very, very long objects, but still finite height, h. And you have two rigid substrates, and you assume that here you glue the system, so no relative motion here, and you have propagation, and you drive your system in, you can drive it in different way. You can apply shear stress here, or force, or and fix it in somehow, or you can try to do different thing. You can try to fix driving velocity, and this is what has been done in experiment, and they never did set up where they fixed driving force and not velocity, and see what happens then. Next point, we just take this input from the experiment that we clearly see two different states of the interface. Let us call it stick and sleep in some sense. We will just try to give precise definition what we actually mean by that. The first, just let us for the moment keep this red line, and let's first of all think about theory of elasticity in the following sense, that we have to impose a boundary condition of solving elastic problem here. First important thing is that independent of the fact that this is gel and this is complicated object, we still for the moment think about this object like a pure elastic medium with small shear modulus. And shear modulus is here is usually six order of magnitude smaller compared to usual material. For example, sound speed, shear sound speed in this object is only meter per second compared to kilometer per second. And since wave speed scales like square root of elastic modulus, it means that elastic modulus six order of magnitude smaller compared to other material. And just pure elastic object, but with this small shear modulus. It's not very important that this is small shear modulus, but I think it's important to assume that this is soft material in the sense that otherwise it's very difficult to assume that we have homogeneous contact here. The soft material, because we usually have roughness of the interface, and this is usual problem when you have dry solid friction, that your apparent area of contact has nothing to do with what you see. But here one can assume that we have more or less homogeneous contact. So we assume that in this region, and we assume that this is just rigid substrate, that it really sticks. It means that displacement of our gel is, of course we don't have, since we assume contact, we don't have Y component of our displacement anywhere. But here we don't have basically also X component of displacement. Or to be more accurate, I will come to this point later, we are saying that sliding velocity in this region is strictly zero. So it's stick region. But in this region we allow for sliding velocity, and important point that since we have contact, there is some friction on this contact. And basically it's very important, and people realize this, that it's very important what we actually assume about the local friction law in this region. What we did in our model, so actually important thing that you have to assume that your shear stress, what does it mean to give some friction law? Your shear stress, this part of the interface, is some function of sliding velocity. And we will assume the simplest possible and theoretically motivated law is just linear viscous law, that the shear stress is proportional to sliding velocity. This law usually is not discussed in friction community by very simple reason. If you assume that you just have this friction law, it means that for arbitrary small driving force, sigma, you have finite velocity of sliding. And it usually contradicts to famous static friction phenomena that you have to have finite force before you get into sliding mode. But you will see in the moment that in our picture you still have static friction phenomena, but due to the fracture threshold. So this is our boundary condition for elastic problem, but it's not enough to formulate this problem. We assume more, and this is very critical assumption, and I think that we will be very much criticized by many people about the second assumption. We assume that this is really that we can have two really thermodynamically defined states of the interface, stick and sleep. In the following sense, that I can think about some more solid behavior here and some liquid behavior in this region. And for example, if I increase temperature, I can go from stick to sleep without applying any driving force, any stresses, any driving velocity. So we assume that our interface thermodynamically can be in two states. And at the temperature of experiment, in most cases, we are trying to say that the stick phase is more favorable. In terms of thermodynamics, we just say that there is difference in interface energy in stick and sleep regime, and interface energy in sleep phase is higher, and this difference we called gamma and assume that this is bigger than zero. So point of normal phase transition between these two states will be when this gamma is zero. It's just like difference in chemical potentials between these two states and the interface. Just we assume this. Just one extra piece of information. Some people did there is so well-known phenomenon which is called shear melting. And in this case, this is situation where you have some lubricant between very thin, of atomic scale between two rigid substrate, and people made some theory of this, assuming that this thin layer can be in two states, solid or liquid, in some sense, and there is phase transition between them. So that's basically what we assume, and this is very strong assumption. I don't want to put it under the carpet, can be completely wrong. And just with this two assumption, with linear friction law, and with the statement that we have energy difference between this and this place. So just this is just an assumption that we have in both cases some sort of adhesion contact, but adhesion contact in this place is higher than in this place. And the difference in this is just this parameter gamma. Actually, that's end of the story. I mean, this is just a formulation of the problem. And we try to understand what is come out of this model. The first trivial thing is the following, that if you don't apply any stresses and you just put in the contact these two states of the interface, that the boundary between them, we assume that this is a sharp boundary like in normal phase transition, will just move in that direction because I assume that stick phase is more favorable. And under some assumptions, this motion will be just proportional to this parameter gamma with some kinetic coefficient. But situation changes drastically if you assume that your body is stressed or strained far in front of this boundary. Then it's not so clear anymore that this state of the interface, this state of the interface is still favorable, but whole body, since stresses can relax in this place, relative displacement is allowed in this trace, so stresses can be relaxed in this region. You can gain energy by propagating in this direction if your applied stress is big enough. This is precisely, in this description, this is precisely Griffith's threshold for crack propagation. This is just edge of the crack, this is just crack, and this strip geometry, and we applied some stress. And conditions that this crack will propagate in this direction will be just this condition. The elastic energy, which is stored far in front of the crack, is just this. And what you have behind of the crack, where all stresses are relaxed, you have just gamma. And if this quantity is bigger than one, it's crack will propagate in the direction the slip will eat up the stick face, and in opposite situation, you go back. And when you have one, this is precisely Griffith's threshold. It's already something, because what we try to say that even that in order to get system to slide, you at least have to overcome this condition. Otherwise, if you apply stress, not fixed velocity, if you just apply stress to the system, you will see that under this condition, you can expect that your system will go into the sleep state and then will slide homogeneously. Assume that we have this condition, then what does it mean? It means that if we apply this stress, the crack can traverse the sample, change situation from stick to slip, and after that system can slide. And if it slides, it slides with this velocity. This we assume is this simple trivial law. And then you can introduce, if you have critical stress, this condition, you can just map it to the velocity, where this coefficient alpha in the friction law just gives you scale of velocity, this S, and the crack, critical sliding velocity will be like that. So we are trying to say that in this picture, we have critical stress for getting system into the sliding mode, and this stress can be mapped into the critical velocity. Let me be more accurate, and before I will go to some more details and trying to explain to you what is real stick slip motion is, to show you some sort of phase diagram. So again, we assume that we have this block and we applied some stress to this system. What in principle we have in this problem, in this model, we have two homogeneous solutions. One of them is pure elastic response. That all our body is stretched, under shear stress, has shear stress, and we have, and this solution corresponds to it. So this is velocity of sliding block versus sigma, this sort of phase diagram. So this is this line. The other possibility is just this our block homogeneously slide along the substrate. And since we assume this trivial linear law, this is just this line. What we are trying to say that at this point, this critical stress, which is nothing more than Griffith's threshold, we will have some sort of first order phase transition. It's not thermodynamical transition, of course. It's a non-equilibrium transition, but we try to bring this analogy. This point, we will jump to this branch, and below this critical stress, we will be in stick regime, and this will be homogeneous sliding regime. So the first statement we're trying to make, this is speculation, that if you try to perform experiment not giving fixed velocity but just giving fixed stress, you will never observe stick slip motion. What you will probably see, this is what I'm showing here, we'll have stick situation here and flip situation here. At this point, I already would like to make some comment. But in this case, if I bring this analogy, this is just usual one of the possible definition of the point of first order phase transition, not instability point, but really point of phase transition where two phases are in equilibrium. It's like melting temperature in some diagram. This is this point in this picture. About more complicated behavior where we have many regions. Here I assume that I don't see reason why I have to have many, because when I put more boundaries I lose energy. Why should I do that? I'm saying if I apply sigma, you will see. Let me continue a little bit, and I will come to a situation when you have many of them, and you have to have many of them. At some moment. But that's what we are trying to say. This is in some sense, if I bring this analogy, it's already, I'm talking in terms of free energy. That is why this is sufficient. The entropy is here in some sense, if you want. If I bring this analogy, this is just a point of first order phase transition. But we can use just language of fracture. This is just Griffith's threshold for correct propagation. If you above this, you will stay more or less forever in stick regime. And this is not precisely the truth, because in principle, even in this experiment, you can have very slow creep motion eventually of your gel. And I would like to comment on this point. In some sense, what I have drawn here, this is some funny friction law. It's not only this is friction law, but this line is also friction law. And what usually people like in friction community, they like to draw just by hand some from scratch some friction law, put in hand some friction law, which looks like something like that. I did not draw this picture. Maybe I can try to do it. Oh, okay. I mean the following: that in principle, instead of having absolutely not movable thing, you can have very very slow motion by some reason, and then you have some point of instability somewhere. Then you jump to this brain, and for low velocity, you may have instability of your small velocity region, something like that. But still, those two points will be definitely points of instability of slow regime and fast regime. But those points are real point of instability. What I'm trying to say is that somewhere in between can be point of first order phase transition. It's like also in thermodynamics, you have not only the point of first order phase transition, but you also have points of instability around it. What is funny here, that this is, of course, if it's something like that, it's just property of material. But this point is not only property of material. I've shown you the formula that height of the block comes into the definition of this critical sigma, since those properties are coupled to bulk elasticity and geometry is unavoidable here. So in principle, you can play with this quantity, just changing geometry. And I must admit that experiment of trying to figure out what would be geometry dependence in this experiment never been done. And I was not able to convince these people to do that. Just, they just believe in some picture which is very different from... Yes, I will use this analogy more efficiently, trying to say that if I prescribe velocity, I will be in this in two phase region in some sense. I will try to do it.
Let's see what you mean,
No, I think I need, because in the definition of this sigma comes this parameter gamma. And if I don't have it, you can call it free. And I assume that this parameter gamma exists and not zero, even if velocity goes to zero. And that's more important. So in this sense, of course, I would like to not to be so thick, to say that this is more general, just. But I'm afraid that I will be in troubles if I try to say that this is a bit more general than that. My feelings that my assumptions are quite strong, and if I ruin some of them, I can. Okay. So what I am trying to say is that even I try to say this, but maybe this is not precisely correct. Even if I have some instabilities, but if I place my position of this point far from those instability point, I still can try to think about transition, first order phase transition, and not only that jump to this branch, for example, happened only at the instability point and went back at this point. Actually, this picture already, in some sense, slightly contradicts to experiment how it's done. Because this picture with first order phase transition, in some sense, assumes that in principle one can observe hysteresis if experiment is done. But looks like that the hysteresis was not observed in this experiment. Okay, now I want to make another point that we can ask the following question now. That assume we still can ask a question which is also relevant to experiment somehow. If my applied sigma, I'm still on the level that I applied sigma, is bigger than Griffith's threshold, I have propagation of this crack. And I would like to calculate its velocity. Model should predict this velocity. And with which velocity this crack moves in that direction. This edge of the crack moves in this direction. Actually, this quantity has been measured in this experiment. And that is why, and important point is only the following, that this velocity of the crack, they observe velocity of the crack, and they are much higher than driving velocity, but much smaller than sound velocity. So it gives us chance that we can work in static theory of elasticity, and I will make comment why in our model we also have this separation of velocity scale, why crack velocity should be still smaller than sound speed velocity. Important point here, in order to do this, what you have to do? You have to solve elastic problem. You have to calculate this boundary condition I have formulated. You have to calculate flux of energy in this point and say that this is equal to gamma plus dissipation at the tip. That would be a question of motion for the crack. This is very important, and I will use it in future. So equation of motion for the crack, if you remember this formula, that I have, in thermodynamics, I have equality between k square and gamma at this point. But if you have motion of the crack, in principle, you have additional dissipation in this point. And usually, all problems which we are faced in crack theory, in fracture theory, due to the fact that we have to really look in details of this process zone near the crack tip in order to calculate correctly dissipation which takes place here. But here we have a chance to avoid this because we already have dissipation in the business. We have friction along this big distance here, and maybe this dissipation is more than that. Actually, we will show that it's logarithmically should be logarithmically larger. So we can even assume local equilibrium at the crack tip. It's still okay because we have dissipation in the problem. We can assume, we can forget about dissipation at the tip. So our equation of motion at the tip would be precisely like they are in equilibrium. But we have to, so what I am saying we have to do, we have to solve elastic problem here with boundary condition I have formulated to calculate energy flux to this, and say that this is equal to gamma. And this will be a question for velocity, and I will explain why it's a question for velocity. Yes?
Would you say that bit worried about your saying that there was dissipation of the slip film.
Mm-hmm.
Because doesn't that mean now you're going to have a sub-mechanism to explain how that happens? And there has to be an explanation of where the dissipation comes from.
I said that I assume a viscous friction law. I assume that shear stress is proportional to velocity. This is by definition dissipation. I should not explain anything, and all parameters, I just assume this, and all parameters are hidden to this coefficient proportionality alpha, which is more or less viscosity. And eventually it turns out that only it brings only velocity scale for us. Well, why should I explain this? I did not get the question. You mean by microscopic mechanism? Yes, precisely. I am assuming that in the slip phase, these two bodies are in contact and there is friction between them.
You need mechanism for that friction.
Why I need? If I said the mechanism is viscous dissipation, I assume viscous dissipation friction law. I do not understand your question. It's by definition dissipation mechanism. Viscosity is dissipative coefficient. It's like in hydrodynamics you have this viscosity, but this is only happens here and not in the bulk. I don't calculate bulk viscous dissipation. I just assume that most of the dissipation takes place here, just for simplicity. Okay, and interesting things, if you solve this problem is exactly solvable. And I will show you just a result of this solution. This slope of this curve is a dissipative coefficient. Oops, no, this is not this. The interesting things here, this is quite remarkable, that if you solve this problem with this friction law in the slip region, you even change singularity of your crack behavior. It's not square root anymore, and it's slightly corrected by a real number which depends on the velocity of the crack. This can be solved exactly here. I have shown some just how displacement field looks in the vicinity of the crack tip. And this is important quantity. This is tip velocity of the crack. And this is parameter S, which relates to this friction law, which I told you that friction. So I told you that this model has basically two parameters. One parameter is gamma, which together with the thickness of your block give you Griffith's threshold. And another parameter is coefficient in the friction law, which in combination with shear model is bring you velocity scale, nothing more. And this velocity scale, this S, is mu over alpha. Alpha is the friction coefficient and mu is shear modulus. Of the local solution, this is usual. You do local analysis at the tip with your boundary conditions, and if velocity is zero, you recover usual singularity, square root singularity. In this case, lambda is not does not correspond to 1/2 anymore. It's slightly corrected by some small.
You're going to solve for lambda.
Yes. We assuming that this is viscous friction law, we solve for lambda, and we find that lambda. This is the result. Lambda is 1/2 plus epsilon, and epsilon is this and more. You calculate epsilon from the energy balance which I told you. Delta is a driving force, so delta bigger than 1. This is exactly conditions that your crack propagates in this direction. H is the size of your block, and due to this change of 1/2, you need microscopic cutoff. And this is another parameter which this model requires. This is the cutoff where any of your assumptions break down, or linear theory of elasticity, or linear dependence of viscous friction law. For example, if it saturates somehow, then you can calculate this A. But important thing, and theoreticians would like it, that this comes under the logarithm. So it's not terribly important how good I estimate this quantity. And this is exact result for speed for propagation of the single crack in this system if I apply shear stress. An important thing that the scale of velocity is given just by S, which I mentioned already is mu over alpha. And now I'm trying just to point out that, and since we have very weak dependence on other parameters, if we are not very close to threshold, if delta is not very close to 1, then basically speed we keep is basically S is S and diminished by logarithmic factor, which is not very much. And S, as I said, it scales like mu. So it gives explanation why this velocity is much smaller than sound speed, because sound speed scales like square root of mu, and mu is a small parameter. So it gives us separation of velocity scales. And from some estimation, I can estimate from their experiment this parameter S, and independently have their experimental data for VTIP, and they fit very well. And this is two independent measure. I don't go to this detail. And now I think I should come to the most difficult part of my talk, to explain stick slip motion. Because up to now, what I only just said, that if I apply fixed driving force, I have some threshold above which I go to sliding regime, and below I have pure elastic response. And this would be like almost like first order phase transition, I'm trying to say. And I can calculate velocity of the propagating crack in this regime as function of my driving force. I have to go back to this my phase diagram, and now using more analogy to phase transition, try to convince you that I definitely have to have stick slip motion, a non-homogeneous situation, if I apply not sigma but velocity. So if I applied some velocity, I definitely lose this solution. No static solution anymore. But still, of course, I have homogeneously sliding solution, but I assume this solution is not very good if my velocity is below this. It's if I try to use the analogy to first order phase transition, and if I plot here pressure P and here the volume of the system V instead of velocity, this is precisely the situation. This is more or less Maxwell line of phase transition, and if I assume that P is given, of course I have normal, or I have liquid, or I have solid. But if I prescribe volume of the system, and this volume in some intervals, then I always should be in two-phase region, because none of them are not good, and I have to have combination of liquid and solid. So basically, what I am trying to do now, I try to assume that I fixed the velocity of my system, and I would like to calculate the structure pattern of my stick slip motion and predict some property of this. And so this is just, I try to put like summary here. So for given stress, I have uniform stick and uniform slip. But for given velocity, I would have uniform slip for velocity bigger than this critical value, which I have already calculated, and we will see. And I would have stick slip motion for this. But if I push this analogy farther, I already should assume that the average shear stress which I will have in my complicated homogeneous system would be on this level. And you would see that this is very helpful, because when I try to just to solve periodic stick slip motion solution, I will have enormous generics of this problem. I don't have enough equation to find the pattern. This is usual story in pattern formation, but here it's even worse. And now I am coming to this final point. I'm trying to understand what's going on if I prescribe velocity in this interval. First of all, I will assume, and again, without real support of this statement, that I will have periodic structure. No real reason for this. This is usual problem. Don't know. Can be chaotic. And in some experiments, it shows really chaotic behavior. But sometimes, those structures are quite regular. So I just assume that I have such a kind of picture. And now let us understand how many parameters we have, what we have to calculate, and how many conditions we have, and what we are actually able to do with this model. You can trust me that these five parameters, this is average stress, you need to prescribe just to solve theory of elasticity in this problem. So you have to know with which velocity in average it moves. I will not put any transparencies of solving theory of elasticity. This is a mess, but can be solved exactly in two limits. You have to prescribe driving velocity. You have to know with which velocity moves edges of this crack, the tip. You have to know average stress, or if you want, average difference between displacement, average displacement here and here. And you have to know geometry, I mean length of this region and length of this region, or in other term, periodicity of the structure and fraction of, let's say, slip phase. So you need five parameters to give. What is the usual experimental situation? Basically, you just prescribe this velocity. All the rest have to be calculated. Problem is that I have, if I solve theory of elasticity giving this five parameter, I am able to calculate stress intensity factors at the both ends of my crack and write equation of motions for crack, like I mentioned. But this is only two equations, and I don't have anything more, and that's our problem. So basically, what I am saying, that this problem has two parameter family of solutions. So in some sense, what I'm trying to say, if you just put arbitrary point in this phase diagram, so you prescribe sigma and v, just prescribe both sigma and v, you are able to calculate only crack velocity, let's say, and fraction of slip phase, but you cannot predict periodicity of your system, and you cannot predict sigma, which in principle you have to measure. It cannot be like that. That one generality I lift, in some sense, it's again assumption, that I said that in stick slip motion it's very reasonable to assume that I still have this phase diagram, so my sigma should be on this level. This is precisely like in Maxwell construction. You find the level, so this is the point of phase transition, so your sigma is on this level. But this is not thermodynamics, and this is just an assumption. But still, I am left, but this is already more common puppet information, I left with unknown periodicity. And about this, I cannot say basically anything. Of course, this periodicity, it's known from many other problems, that you have to introduce, you cannot find in many problems like directional acidification or eutectic growth, you cannot find periodicity of your structure just discussing steady state motion, which I am discussing here, of periodic pattern. And you have to introduce idea of nucleation of new regions and how they annihilate and all these dynamics, or just do more complicated things. We did not do very much about this. I just mentioned that we can solve it for given periodicity. That would be one result. But we have assumed, just to present some results, some final result, and stop stop talking, that the characteristic length scale of this pattern, I mean, let's say not periodicity, the smallest, this the the smallest length scale of this pattern should be of the order of h. I cannot, this is more delicate point. I have much more time to try to convince that it plausible assumption. This has to do with analysis of nucleation of sleep regions in this region, that they should have scale of h, this characteristic critical nuclear, and such a kind of thing. But we assume this, and then we have predicted the following final behavior. So in this case, you can calculate everything. So with, I have written this assumption here. So we just assume that characteristic minimum of these two length scale are of the order of h, and here I have drawn velocity of the crack tip, which has been calculated as function of driving velocity normalized by critical velocity, and here I have shown the picture of fraction of the sleep phases, and as it should be, and this is precisely the definition of this critical velocity, the critical that at critical velocity, that whole interface becomes in sleep regime. So to conclude, I can say only a few things. That's, in my opinion, this is at least conceptually simple model, but it leads already to very rich pattern formation problem. I'm saying that there are some selection problems there. But conceptually, it's very simple. Second, it has only two parameters. I said this is just parameter gamma and this velocity scale, which is given by friction law. And this velocity scale can be found from independent of experiment of this group and very nicely fit to everything. And then you can make some prediction, like critical velocity of which and compare it with experiment. You can calculate approximate velocity of crack, which also can be compared to experiment. And all these things are in qualitative agreement. But still, it's not to say that this is really a real explanation of this experiment. And many people do believe that at least people from this experimental group, they do believe that, for example, their critical velocity has nothing to do with any first order phase transition point, but just due to the fact that you have somewhere real instability of your friction law, that this your friction law goes back somewhere, and this is just actually this point in principle I think can be cleared up, because our predictions that critical velocity depends on geometry, and in their picture, at least, they don't have theory, they have only picture, just saying that it's like that. It should be just material property. Of course, maybe it's very difficult to sort it out. Second remark about possible experiments of the, in this direction. See, they have very funny geometry. The height of their object and length of their object just comparable. Of course, theory is done with this basically infinitely long. And at least it would be nice to have experiment where they see at least, I don't know, few of those guys simultaneously in the sample. So I mean, dependence on they did very careful analysis how many property of their experiment depends on property of gel. They can change property of gel, which means in my language, just change a little bit gamma and change a little bit this velocity s, and that's it. But they did, they change concentration of water, and they discuss how critical velocity depends on this. But unfortunately, they did not do any attempt to try to figure out geometry dependence. Maybe it's difficult, I don't know. And second, I think it's also very, in my opinion, it's quite important to try to make experiments. Maybe again, it's difficult. I'm not expert in this. Not only fixing velocity, but also fixing driving force, which, for example, we are trying to say that you will never see any stick sleep. You will see just or stick or sleep, but not this non-homogeneous mode. Okay, that's the story.
Dissipation
process is negligible?
I can say only one thing. If you do theoretical estimate, this logarithm is precisely which makes dissipation on the scale of H, because it takes place on the scale of H. By this logarithm, it's higher. But it's no problem in principle to introduce in this theory. I think it's not a big deal to introduce dissipation in the tip, because I am saying that velocity of the tip is much smaller than sound speed. In this case, it's very simple to assume that it's just linear. I mean, you add to your this energy, this flux, just linear dissipation. So it would be not a function, just parameter. It will introduce to the problem one parameter, which is kinetic coefficient of your tip. This will be new parameter and.
Huh? It sort of adds to alpha or something.
Yeah, we do. What I'm trying to say, if I did a reasonable theoretical estimate, assuming that this parameter is something like that, then I see the dissipation due to friction is logarithmically larger than dissipation in the tip region. That is why I'm saying that one can try to neglect it. But in principle, it's no problem to introduce it on this level. A real problem comes for brittle fracture, for TOC, which have been done a couple of weeks ago, that it does not make sense to introduce simple linear dissipation in the tip, because it's known that it's not like that if you already quite, because velocity becomes of the order of sound speed very quickly, and then you, but here velocity are much smaller than sound speed, so it's reasonable. My feeling that this is not very important in this problem, but maybe, again, I don't know. Because it's usual situation that you have dissipation in the bulk, in some sense, this is a bulk, I mean, it's bigger than dissipation in the tip if you are in normal condition.
And do the experimental results bear out your result of the size of the slip and skip?
Yes, qualitatively everything is fine. Theory predicts that, let's say, length scale of your slip zone, not only fraction, but length scale of your slip zone increases and basically diverges at critical speed. Of course, they cannot do because they have finite sample, but what they see that slip region increases when velocity, when driving velocity reaches critical velocity.
And the periodicity also is...
Periodicity, yeah. In qualitative level, absolutely no disagreement. I would say there is only one very serious disagreement. I already mentioned this. That this picture, our picture, definitely should be of hysteresis type. I don't see reason why I, for example, cannot drive my velocity slightly below my critical one, still having sleeping zones. This is not unstable situation. This is just only point of first order phase transition. They never observe hysteresis. And this is my suspicion that somehow this point of instability, so they try to say that this is point of instability of this their friction law, interfere with my picture. But again, I am saying that maybe this in this specific experiment, I can play with this quantity. I can try to move it in this direction because it depends on geometry. And this is, as the other is inconstant. And I can try to separate this scale of point of instability and first order phase transition just. Because the other one is just property of materials. This is just an assumption about your friction law, underlying friction law. But this one, this value, is just age dependent because it's coupled to the bulk elasticity. One of them is geometry dependent, another one, I mean geometry dependent not in the sense that you have longer or shorter sample, thickness of your sample, even if it's infinitely long.
Very interesting problem. You've not convinced me still about the phase transition analogy, which I don't think you really need. I think, look, you made the very interesting comparison between this and some of these other pattern formation problems, like, well, how do you determine the periodicity of the solidification fact? And directional solidification, things like that. And you know, we know a lot about that now, at least I thought we did a few years ago.
And we know that in principle you can have coexisting patterns, but we also know that it's a mistake to try to understand these in terms of minimizing some sort of
sure, freedom. Sure.
And that you can get essentially everything out of a simple dynamic.
Sure.
Then you have a perfectly nice dynamical picture with a sort of phenomenological friction law and the energy balance.
Yeah, sure.
Perfectly good sense. You can sort of see that at your critical place, if you think about keeping adjusting the speed at which you're pulling, that uniform slip, if you slow the speed down, eventually you must get to the place, it must be where I guess it must be the crack speed must go essentially at the same as the speed.
Nothing like that. Crack speed is always much higher than that.
Crack speed also always has to be considerably greater than that.
Sure, and it's always like that.
So what that means is that that you've got somehow to add to your theory now, in order to get the energy balance right,
mm-hmm.
You've got to add to the theory some mechanism by which not only does the crack open up, but it heals in the back.
Oh, it heals in the back, no problem. I don't have problem with this. I discussed.
But what you don't have is what you have to do is to figure out now what the width of the crack.
You mean that whether I have extra condition for healing, not only energy balance.
Yeah. And because obviously, what's happening is I'm pulling slowly, mm-hmm. and I get into a mode. Probably you've got to have the fact that the cracks are going to be most likely to initiate at one end. And so you get into a mode, it stretches a bit, and then all suddenly you've got up to some threshold at the end of these zones, mm-hmm. slipping zones, zips through, mm-hmm. relaxes, and repeats again.
Mm-hmm.
And it can do this in various ways, which is I see as the analog of the directional question of while one is zipping through, can another one be starting,
yeah.
and what are the conditions for that?
Yeah.
I don't see anything having to do with free energy.
No. Absolutely, I never use it. Never use it.
But I think you're just getting yourself in trouble.
No. Let me comment. I talk about phase transitions, thermodynamical phase transition in two contexts, and one should be careful with this. One context was just to introduce, it has nothing to do with my dynamic, just to introduce two different states of the interface like thermodynamical object. Otherwise, I cannot introduce parameter gamma.
Okay.
That's what. Second point, I used only analogy to phase transition. I never use it explicitly in any formula. Yeah, maybe it was my mistake. Maybe just people don't need this. Maybe people. But for example, it's not trivial. You can find this point sigma c if you discuss pure static crack propagation. But I would like to draw a vertical line. In some sense, it's not obvious. Maybe it goes like that. That I don't know. But in this sense, I tried to use some analogy, because there are, if one very careful, one can find many weak points in this line. It's not only to find this periodicity. I'm saying this, in difference to directional acidification, I have two parameters to select, average sigma and periodicity. And with periodicity, I don't have problems that it's, I know that this is a complicated problem. But my feeling is that sigma, our guess is that I put this line precisely at Griffith's threshold. Maybe it's.
Can you solve the simple problem and the simpler problem in the limit of very small pulling speed, where know what the answer has to be? You add elastic energies very slowly, and then all of a sudden, somewhere, probably at one edge, because there's an effective defect at that place that lowers the
nucleates.
And can you then solve the problem saying, okay, in the limit of very much faster than the pulling speed, I'll have a zone, and it's going to move across. You know how often you have to have that zone move across it. It's just always is a single zone. In order to maintain the constant pulling speed. That, by the way, looks quite a lot like the earthquake problem.
You mean to solve really, really finite sample problem? Finite sample problem. Yes, that's what you're saying. No, yeah, we didn't. I think the theory of elasticity becomes a mess in this case. Sure. Really becomes a mess. Yeah. No, of course, in order to compare with experiment, one should solve. Sure.
Jim is reacting, I think, because this sort of brings us all back 20 years of.
No, it's actually bringing me back to the paper I've just written to.
So. Okay, but I'm reacting because it sort of brings me back 20 years or so. And let's assume that this talk about phase transitions we just ignore.
Ignore.
Right.
No problem.
So I'll do you that.
Mm-hmm. Model is like that, and
right,
that's it.
And that's it. But in the models that we have been studying now for a long, long time, it's been very useful to have a dynamical model that you can simulate. And you can use all kinds of geometries and simulate. And now, I agree that the answers are a bit disappointing mm-hmm. from the point of view of extracting basic
useful information.
Well, no,
okay.
No, that's the point. We don't extract deep truths, mm-hmm. but we do extract useful information. And so my question is, don't you have some models that one can simulate?
No, in principle.
And no, not in principle. In
no, fact, I mean, we do have the model, but we did not simulate it. That's only the point. Model, I formulated the model. It's not... I solve this model only assuming periodicity and right. not time dependence, but model I formulated absolutely, right. absolutely.
And so
absolutely.
It seems to me that once you have a model that's simple enough so that you can simulate it and all of these questions, you can get simple answers, you know, you change the geometry, you change the external conditions, you look at the transients, you look at where things come from, and it'll probably end up.
I think
a lot of insight.
I perfectly agree with you. My problem for the moment, I agree. I started to work on this problem just I don't know 6 months or okay year ago, and it took me a while just to formulate the problem and even to solve. This one, I agree with you, but there is another problem that cannot convince experimentators that it makes any sense.
That's why it seems to me that simulations
Oops.
Are a demonstration, can be a demonstration that, well, if you change your geometry in this way and your conditions in this way, you will get the following surprising result.
Okay.
That's really what
huh?
simulation.
Yeah. It's also, okay. They don't accept the idea about gamma. See, this is more crucial that you can. All results which I predict qualitatively agree what they have. I mean, most of them. It does not convince them at all. Just because they don't, and I agree with them, if I would not believe in basic picture, all the rest can be just coincidence. That's fine. I'm not arguing with this, but I'm trying to say that this, I'm afraid that whatever I do in the spirit of this model will not convince them too much. That's what I mean Christian, yes, precisely. I mean Christian.
Roughness, some kind of noise, roughness of the surface, gets in the
bulk material or something like that, then you should have the random creation of it, basically.
Nucleation? You mean that I have nucleation of those guys?
You should necessarily be minimizing the energy, you should be minimizing the free energy, which would be, may increase the energy, but just because you can create this random few cracks like that, you increase the energy, you add up, you wouldn't enter, but you wouldn't have the energy, right? If you really have a two-state system, then somehow you should.
To be honest, I do not. My gamma is free energy. If you would like, all the rest is dynamics. My gamma is free energy in this sense. If you're talking about this, it's not an energy. It's free energy.
Yeah, it's basically what you're talking about are just changes in the macroscopic. It's a good question.
And also, I'm not doing any, in some sense, it's complete mean field. Fluctuations are not important, and Langevin terms are not important. I need them if I would like to discuss nucleation dynamics. But again, this is just a matter only how to estimate a nucleation of sleep region if you do dynamics, not steady state propagation of the pattern. If you try to select this length scale, you need to introduce all this dynamical property and to see them. But that's, of course, in this case, I need fluctuations, but not in that sense. Yep.
In your model, you remarked you should have some supercooling and superheating. You should have some hysteresis.
Yes. My feeling is that, in principle, I don't see any reason why I cannot go slightly, if I start from pure sliding regime.
But what do you mean by slightly? How would you estimate that?
No idea about this. So you're perfectly right, but I never tried to think about this.
No, it's certainly conceivable that if you find some sort of optimal state below its critical velocity, there's some sort of a pattern, and then he slows down the velocity a little bit. It ought to have some stability. If there's some sort of natural or optimum state according to some dynamical mechanism, it ought to be able to trap it in something that is not optimal.
But, just consider the pure slip state.
Yeah.
You're in pure slip,
mm-hmm.
and then you slow down. Then you want to go to stick slip.
Yeah.
That's a nucleation problem.
In principle, I am saying that I will go to stick sleep if I below critical this velocity. But in principle, I can go farther.
I have some bearing.
Yeah. I have to get some nucleation. Yes. It's not. This is nucleation in already not equilibrium problem. This is hard issue. I cannot answer your question. How I can? But in principle, I can. I should think about hysteresis, but they claim that they never saw anything like this. They very reproducibly have this 125 microns per second if they go, if they increase driving velocity or they decrease driving velocity, they have this. It's signs of real instability, usually. It points towards real instability at this point.
But the point is that they don't have, there's no analog of homogeneous nucleation
yes.
in experimental
yeah.
samples. Or
Yeah, they, everything comes from the trailing edge, yes.
You think they maybe an alley?
Sorry?
At least they could get rid of one of the boundary conditions by making it baryonic, slipping.
I don't know.
Instead of the,
I think that in principle many things can be done in this direction. Because my feeling is that...
You have to have a very clean donut.
No,
having
sugar.
Yeah, how pulling.
You have to make it very large. Make it very large.
No, I think it would be sufficient if they make a really, really long sample compared to the height, just to have more homogeneous solution, more homogeneous condition that they have. But see, I cannot give them any suggestion. Just. No, I mean I'm not expert in experiment, not from point of view that it's not easy to talk to some of them, but just it's difficult. I can have some picture in mind, but then people thought, oh, you are crazy. It's absolutely impossible to do realization of this, really, because you think too theoretically. That's usual situation.
Further questions, comments? If that's not the case, let's go for lunch.
Thank you very much.